up now, get up now, get up out of bed. Wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your sleepy head. Here's your clothes and your shoes, hear the words I say.
Welcome to Because I Said So. We have such a packed show today. I don't want to waste much time, but it is Earth Day. We have two very special guests, Carrie Sammis from Maryland Coastal Bays and Nancy Marasco. She's going to talk about the Green Earth Book Awards. So please join us on this Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, everyone. We have some special guests with us today. Our first guest, Carrie Sammis, who, by the way, thank you, Carrie, for naming our show.
Yay. I'm super proud of that. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Kathy put it out on Facebook, and you came back with Because I Said So, and it stuck, and we love it.
I'm glad that you love it. I love it, too.
Thank you so much. Well, you're here, though, to talk about Earth Day because you are the education coordinator for Maryland Coastal Bays, and you also served as education curator at the zoo for many years, so you really know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm learning all the time, so.
But yes. And you're a mother now, so you actually you have a beautiful 5-year-old daughter.
She just turned 5. Yep.
So we get to see on Facebook and other places where you're taking her out and showing her the world. So we want to know how we can do that with our kids, Carrie. How do we get our kids outside?
Well, you go with them.
Number one.
That's the key.
One thing. Oh, don't just push them out the door and say, come back after dinner.
Although, you know, that's how it used to be. Our parents would kick us out. Right. And, you know, when the dinner bell would ring, we'd be back in whatever shape, you know, we came back in.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's what people did for years was send their children outside to play and say, don't come home until dinner. And who knows what they were doing out there. But that happens less and less frequently all the time. And, I mean, my parents, I know, talked about, you know, being outside for the entire day, and they would send my brother and I outside and say, report back at lunch or come back for the, you know, there was usually at least a mealtime check-in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Nourishment.
But now people do that less and less frequently and for a whole host of reasons.
But you had mentioned before when we were talking, there is such a disconnect with our children today and the outside world and nature.
Right. Right.
Yeah. They just don't know.
Yeah, a few years ago, a gentleman by the name of Richard Louv wrote a book called Last Child in the Woods and coined the term nature deficit disorder. And he sort of balked at the term initially when they decided to link that with his book. But it was something that resonated with people because we hear all the time about different deficit disorders. Mm-hmm. And so nature deficit disorder immediately makes sense to people. And it's a very real thing. It's not a medical diagnosis, but it is a real thing. And with fewer and fewer children spending time outside, they don't have that connection. And, you know, we mentioned just briefly some of the reasons why there are a lot of different barriers. People have less time. People are worried about stranger danger. People are worried about, you know, insect bites and tick-borne illnesses and snake bites and, I mean, all sorts of things, some of which are not very real threats, some of which are more just sort of worried moms. And I understand that. I get that.
And then there's kids who just want to stay plugged in all day long.
And there are kids who want to stay plugged in all day long. And, you know, the average kid now spends 6 to 8 hours a day in front of a screen and less than an hour a week outdoors. Mm. So that's a huge, huge shift.
It is. And, you know, Carrie, I used to work in a school district with a large poverty population. Mm-hmm. And talking to the moms, you know, those kids would sit inside all day because they were scared to send them outside. The safety on the street, there was no green area to play. And, you know, trying to come up with solutions to help those families was very difficult.
Absolutely. It is. It's a challenge. It definitely can be a challenge. And but I would say that the statistics show that, like, child abductions and that sort of thing are actually on the decline since the 70s when I was a child. But one of the changes is that the media coverage has so increased. And so there's the perception that it's a more prevalent problem when, in fact, it happens much less frequently. And then people worry about, you know, like we said, there are a lot of precautions that you can take to make sure that your child is safe from strangers or from ticks or from whatever.
But like you said, Carrie, go outside with them.
Get outside with them. That's
and I was
exactly
going to say,
right.
We had snakes and ticks, you know, 30 years ago when I was a child, too. So what happened there?
That may be increased media coverage to some extent, too. You know, you hear all these stories and whatever, but I've lived on the Delmarva Peninsula since I was a child, and I hear people all the time talking about snake bites, and I'm out in the woods a lot, mm-hmm. and I have been since I was a child, and I've never been bitten by a snake. I have only seen a copperhead on a few occasions. The copperhead is the only venomous species that we have on the Delmarva Peninsula. We don't have water moccasins. We don't have rattlesnakes. We don't have anything like that. Copperheads are the only ones. You don't see them very frequently. I don't know anyone who's ever been bitten by one, let alone die.
Well, I do think if people are saying that it's snakes that are keeping them from going outside, that they're making that up.
Right. Yeah.
I do think that, I mean, my perception is that kids today are getting more and more education mm-hmm. about the environment. Mm-hmm. So they can tell you about the rainforest and they can tell you about things that are going on in our planet as a whole, but they have less and less direct contact with mm-hmm. nature themselves. And so it might be from, you know, I think that we have to somehow bring it back home.
Absolutely.
You know, to them. And why is that important? Why do we want them to care about nature?
Well, there are a whole lot of reasons. I think that, you know, it not just why you want them to care about nature for nature's sake, but why you want them to spend time in nature for their own sake. It helps with cognitive, emotional, and social development. It helps to improve your creative thinking skills and enhance creativity. It helps with critical thinking and problem skills. There are what's termed the infinite parts of nature, which, you know, there are so many things to do and see and experience and touch and smell and sometimes taste carefully. And, you know, that you get to utilize all of your senses. And by spending time outdoors, you're also helping to combat things like childhood obesity and attention deficit disorders. And there are a lot of studies that show that children with ADD and children with autism benefit from spending time outdoors because it has a calming effect. And so there are a whole host of personal health reasons why it's important to spend time outside. But then as an individual who has worked for conservation-related organizations for the last 20 years, I worry about the disconnect from nature and how, as the children that are spending more time in front of a screen than outside are growing up, what's gonna sort of push them to vote for legislation to help protect our lands and our waters and wildlife populations and things like that if they have no personal connection to it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and with a lot of the studies that have been done lately with one of the things that's happened with kids spending so much time in front of screens, whether it's their phone or their iPod or a television or a computer or whatever, is the average 8-year-old can identify over 200 corporate logos but cannot identify 10 living things in their own backyard. Mm. That's crazy.
So you've met my 8-year-old.
I see.
That is crazy.
It is crazy. Wow. And it's so easy to fix.
Yeah.
And so easy to do. And there are so many local resources. We live in the perfect area for taking your kids outside.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that, too, when mm-hmm. we come back. Different things that parents out there who are listening can do with their children to get them outside and have fun with them. Mm-hmm. It's actually something the whole family can enjoy.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back.
Attention moms, win a free 1-hour massage from Essential Life Therapeutic Massage thanks to the moms from Because I Said So. Go to our Facebook page and share your Mother of the Month story. Get your friends to like it, and you could win. Find the rules for the contest on our website at becauseisaidsoradio.com. Good luck. And of course, listen to us Saturday afternoon at 2. You gotta feed the cat, eat your
breakfast, the experts tell us. We're back with Carrie Samus, the education coordinator for Maryland Coastal Bays. And Carrie, we really want to know, because from what I hear Jackie saying, she sees pictures of your daughter on Facebook all the time in all these wonderful, natural, beautiful places. What are some of the top five things you like to do with your daughter outdoors?
We go to the beach all the time. And it doesn't matter what season it is. So, you know, a lot of people around here go to the beach during the summer, of course, but we actually prefer the beach in the spring, fall, and even winter. So New Year's Day, I think for every year since Ella was born, we have been on a beach somewhere, Assateague or Ocean City or Rehoboth or Lewis, and we've had some unseasonably warm weather on some of those years, but other years she's been completely bundled up in like a snowsuit, and she loves the beach and is so comfortable there. It doesn't matter. So she's like making, you know, sand angels instead of snow angels. And when she was only at 2 years old, one of the days that we were down at the beach in the middle of winter, she's pretty fearless, and she will like just run into the water. It doesn't matter. She doesn't really think about, oh, it's kind of cold, until after the fact. So I always make sure we have a change of clothes. And I kind of got into that habit anyway. You do when you're a new mom, because they might throw up on you, mm-hmm. or, you know, might have a diaper
blowout
or anything like that. So now I just continue to keep a change of clothes in the car for myself and for her.
Including probably a pair of shoes.
That's right. And always a change of shoes. Right. Yeah. Because those opportunities present themselves all the time, and I want to be able to take advantage of them. And a little dirt, it's not going to hurt her. It's actually going to help.
Well, that's a good point, because I think as moms, we get a little freaked out by dirt. Mm-hmm. And I know I am, for one. You know, if they come back with dirt on their shoes, I'm angry at them rather than being happy that they've been playing in dirt. And so that's a sort of a different mindset that we probably need to work on. Okay, yeah. I need to work on.
What else do you like to do, Bella?
Well, Jackie mentioned earlier the horseshoe crabs. Ella and I, one of the things we like to do at the beach is go see horseshoe crabs during spawning season. And that is one of the like wildlife spectacles in our area that you can't see anywhere else in the world. And so the Delaware Bays and coastal bays in Maryland, that's exactly the spot where hundreds of thousands of horseshoe crabs come onto the beach to spawn. They lay their eggs on the beach.
What time of year do they do this?
In May and June.
Okay.
Is it full moon?
So it's coming up soon.
Full moon is
one of the times that it's like peak.
Okay.
But pretty much from the middle of May until early June, you can see this locally.
And I think just, if you wouldn't mind, can you send us one of your pictures to post on our website just so we can show people
absolutely
this madness of horseshoe crabs?
It's amazing. And when I was a child, I was scared of horseshoe crabs. I thought the tail would hurt you. They look all spiny and sort of prehistoric.
They do look prehistoric,
and, right?
Yes.
They look kind of scary.
They are prehistoric.
But Ella they are prehistoric. And but they're harmless. They're completely harmless. They do have a hard shell, but they can't bite you. They can't pinch you. They can't nothing.
Right. They're the easiest crabs to get along with.
They are the easiest. Right. And we know about crabs that are not easy to get along with around here. But you can go to some of those Delaware beaches, especially where there are just thousands of them on the beach. And I do. I have pictures of Ella from days that we've spent out there where it's just she and I on the beach, and she's sort of running around in the mud, covered head to toe in mud and horseshoe crabs, like horseshoe crab eggs. You can pick them off of her body because they're tiny little green pearly eggs. And I even let her eat one last year because she was like, well, can I taste it?
Because you know she probably already did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, the dirt's not going to hurt her. You just rinse her off. It's no big deal. And she's not frightened of them at all or anything, and it's an amazing experience. And when I ask her about some of her favorite things to do outside, that's one of the things that she always talks about. So last May, we took my nephew along with us, and when he walked out onto the beach, just the amazement in his eyes, he was like, this is the best beach ever! And it's muddy and gross and covered in bird poop and... Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting, but amazing. It's phenomenal and really beautiful once you really understand what's happening there.
Now, you also, is one of your favorite things, there's like a herp search or something that you guys do with Coastal Bays. First of all, what's a herp and where do you find them?
So the Great Worcester Herp Search is an event that we have with the Maryland Coastal Bays program, and it's in May, on a Saturday in May. It's very family friendly. I took Ella there before I was even working for Coastal Bays program. So it's a really cool event, and you can go outside with wildlife professionals, so you're completely safe, and you're learning about herps and herpetology or herpetofauna, that's the broader name for reptiles and amphibians. And Worcester County has one of the highest concentrations of reptiles and amphibians in our entire state. So we have tremendous herp diversity, and you can go out for the whole entire day with field biologists and other very knowledgeable local naturalists and things like that. And you're flipping over logs looking for salamanders and peeling back bark to try to find little ringneck snakes and catching toads and looking for turtles and all that sort of thing. And it's a great introduction if you're not comfortable with, you know, going outside with your kid. It's a great introduction. It's very safe. It's kind of scientific, so that makes it sort of cool, but it's not really all that scientific.
Right.
So you don't have to be an expert in any way, shape, or form. And there are really great books like this, Amphibians and Reptiles of Delmarva, that can help you get to know the species that we have right here. And if you're interested in, like if a child is interested in learning more about animals, local herps are really easy to learn. There are 19 species of frogs in Maryland. You can learn to recognize them by call. There are, you know, several species of turtles and snakes, but they have pretty distinctive characteristics. And so within a very short period of time, an 8-year-old can become an expert, which is pretty cool.
But I think, too, you know, as far as it's hands-on, you know, if you're touching them. And I think sometimes, too, parents need to not be so scared to touch them because, you know, your kids will do, they'll mirror in what you do.
I think that's really important. One of the things that I see when I'm working with parents and with teachers and things like that is you have to be so, so careful not to pass on your phobias if you have them, because I've seen children who were perfectly comfortable touching a snake or looking at a spider, and then they see an adult freak out.
Yeah.
And that,
it doesn't.
That changes them. Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. So if you do have any of those phobias, you just have to be really, really careful to sort of, you know,
keep it to yourself.
Dial that back. Yeah. Right. Keep it to yourself.
We're going to wrap up actually just by talking about some good news that recently legislation passed with the environmental education requirement. This is good news for everyone.
It is good news. Formal education initiatives are happening right now at the local, state, and federal levels, which is really exciting. There's proposed legislation in within the federal government. The state of Maryland is very progressive, and just last fall passed the first ever environmental literacy high school graduation requirement. And so now other states across the nation are sort of following our lead. And as a result of that requirement, now local counties are working on an environmental literacy plan, which is infusing environmental education into every grade level. So every single year and in every subject area. It's not science specific. So, you know, nature can be very inspiring and can be a great source of inspiration for art and literature and all that sort of thing. So there are ways to talk about nature and the benefits of nature and conservation and all that sort of thing in every subject area. And we need an environmentally literate society to kind of face the difficult problems that we're facing now.
Definitely. So bottom line, parents, get off your hinies and go outside and play with your kids.
And it's fun.
And
it's
get
so
dirty.
Fun.
Discover nature. Carrie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
Please join us each week for Says You, played in front of a live, dedicated audience. Who came from the furthest to be here?
Baltimore.
Baltimore, Maryland. Anybody?
California.
India?
What?
India?
Excellent. Well, it's the beginning. We've started outsourcing our audience.
Says You airs right here. Here's when.
Sunday evening at 8 on NPR News Talk 90.7 FM.
We're so glad you're joining us here at Because I Said So at Delmarva Public Radio. We have a special guest with us today, Nancy Marasco, who is a founding member and on the board of directors of the Newton Marasco Foundation. And why is Nancy here with us? Because she's really important. And when it comes to the environment, we're talking about Earth Day. Welcome, Nancy.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me here today.
Can you tell us a little bit first, as a background, what the foundation is and what it does.
Absolutely. The Newton Roscoe Foundation was developed about a decade ago, and we work very hard to promote environmental stewardship for children. We may be too late. Hopefully not.
No.
But the idea is to impress upon the next generation to improve what they do to the planet.
Do they understand what environmental stewardship is?
Not the word stewardship.
Okay.
But they certainly are aware of the arrows that form a rotating circle to reduce, reuse, and recycle.
There you go.
That is amazing that they do know that. And they, from very young age, will learn through books and through teachers and through role models, parents, what to do and perhaps maybe what is not a good choice to do when it comes to the environment.
And we'll talk about the Green Earth Book Award then, too, because that's important. And you have some award winners over there.
I do.
With you. But it is interesting to kind of figure out how we should teach our children to care about the environment.
Well, I guess that's my question. I mean, where do we start and what age do we start? And what have you found to be effective at young ages?
Well, certainly number one is by modeling for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do as I say and not as I do doesn't work here. Because if you want your children or grandchildren, because I'm dealing with both, then you need to certainly set a good example. You need to be that role model. You need to turn off the lights. A really good way for children to learn about water usage is if they normally take a bath, and we know that baths take much more water than a shower does, stop up the tub and have them take a shower. And then they realize how little water that uses when they take a shower, because it will be barely above their ankles. And if you were going to give them a bath, they would be wanting it pretty much up to their chin.
My daughter might be the one exception to that, because she actually likes to sit down in the shower. In fact, one morning I went in and I swear she was asleep. I think she was asleep in the shower, if that's possible. So, but I like that idea. That's
that
a good
cool.
idea.
That is cool, yeah.
And children learn better rather than you telling them. Most of them are very visual learners at that point, and so they see the difference. The same thing when they're brushing their teeth. I mean, if we go back to how we used to do things, which was all very incorrect years ago, brushing your teeth. And how often did you leave the water running while you're brushing your teeth? Again, stop up the sink and realize how much water that wastes if you're doing that.
My 8-year-old does stop up the sink so he can fill it up while he's brushing his teeth. And I tell him it's a waste. I don't know really what he's thinking. He thinks it'll help rinse all the toothpaste then down when he unclogs the sink, I think. I don't know.
I think mine save water by not brushing their teeth. I think that's their approach.
Well, that may not be the best way to do that.
No.
Who's modeling that?
I don't. Not me, I have to tell you. It's very frustrating.
So where did the idea for the Green Earth Book Award originate then?
It actually originated across the street from this radio station in a particular restaurant. We were having a very lovely dinner and sharing a bottle of wine and thinking that with this university right here, and I do have a sister who is a professor here, why not combine it with some of the programs that the university is using and promote good reading and for young children, for stewardship. So the Green Earth Book Award comes to authors and illustrators who do that best. And we have this year we had, I believe, 132 books submitted to us. And our list of evaluators include people on the EPA, professors here, library folks.
Now, are these people
teachers?
From all across?
All across the country.
Oh, okay.
And they're given, all these books are submitted, and then they're into four different categories so that we can break them out, because obviously you don't have a picture book going up against a young adult nonfiction. It's not a good playing field. So that we do that, this year, as a matter of fact, we have five categories, and this year our factors are so stringent, we only awarded four.
Oh,
because
wow.
But this is a big thing that everybody sits and reads and they meet, and there are specific people designed to really understand a picture book. This year's winning picture book was Mark Brown's Arthur, and it's Arthur Turns Green. And what's very significant about this one is that Mark Brown hasn't written a book in 20 years. And
wow.
Arthur, yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
And while he wasn't able to attend the awards ceremony, he did send a 3-minute video, which you'll be able to see on our website in about another week.
Oh, that's great.
And it was wonderful to see that.
And looking at seeing the book, that what what made it become the winning children's picture book, though? What was it about it that made it the winner?
He did a great thing called he had Arthur Classroom do a project, a green project, and they mm-hmm. called it the Green Machine. Mm-hmm. And his hands turned green while he was doing it. And I hate to give away the plot
on
why his hands turned green, but he actually made a poster and listed the top, I think it's 8 things that kids can do easily at home to help make their home more green. And the big one that I have 5 grandchildren, and the big one they always tell me is that they're really tired of Daddy leaving the cell phone charger plugged in.
Yes.
Oh, so, yes. So in this particular case, because I love my son-in-laws, I have 3, the point was not to make him green, but to save him money.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So if
to
you,
earn him green.
And yes, money earns green. Him green. So sometimes you just have to approach the same thing in a different way.
Yeah,
you know?
You have to know which points work.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, it's like I have 3 children, and some of you have multiple children, and there are different teaching methods for different children. There are for adults as well.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things Arthur talks about is using cloth napkins. So we've come up with a really good way to do this, which is fun. If you use the roller out of a paper towel or a couple out of the toilet paper roll,
mm-hmm.
if you cut them into a size so that they look like a napkin ring, then you have the child decorate it. So they're redoing the cardboard, and then they're able to put the napkin back in. So you don't wash the napkin every time you use it. And in most cases, that's okay. And there certainly are exceptions.
Depends on whose house you're at, right?
Right. And, you know, that's one of the big things. Put your computer on sleep mode. Don't shop in the refrigerator. That's a big one. The refrigerator is a big energy hog.
Let me ask you, Nancy. My daughter is 12. Is there a book? And she's this year turned into a voracious reader. Is there something that she should be reading that won an award this year, maybe for her category of reading?
There is a wonderful book by Gail Lewis called Wild Wings, and that's really a beautiful one. And that was an award winner. We also have several honor books, and one of the other ones that might be good for her age is 101 Ways to Save the Planet, written by Deborah Underwood. That's also another good one. Gaia Warriors is good, depending on her reading level, that one in the young adult nonfiction category, and The Mangrove Tree, Planting Trees to Feed Families by Cindy Trumbore and Susan Roth. The nice thing about that one is the artwork to that is right now in the Ward Museum, and it will be until June.
Oh, great.
Very nice. We're going to obviously put the website on our website to share with our listeners, and also you can find out information on our Facebook page, and we'll list some of the books and the winners. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. I learned a lot, actually, because I realized how maybe green I'm not, and you're right.
Lead by example.
That's right. You're right. Don't shop in the refrigerator.
Well, my pleasure to be here today.
Thank you so much. We'll be back. You've been listening to Because I Said So, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. For more information, including podcasts of this episode, visit us online at becauseisaidsoradio.com. Thanks to Anita Renfro for allowing us to use her song Momisms as our theme song. And be sure to like us on Facebook. Look for the lady with the red hot lips.
I said so. I'm the mom.
This is Terry Gross, the host of NPR's Fresh Air. Delmarva Public Radio signed on the air 25 years ago, May 29th, 1987, and has been bringing you great classical music and NPR news ever since. And that's thanks to your ongoing support. Happy anniversary, Delmarva Public Radio.